This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
UK sight loss charity RNIB has recently gone through a period of transformation. But what does that mean for the organisation, its staff, volunteers and customers? RNIB's chief exec is Matt Stringer and he joins me now. Matt, thank you very much for joining us.
Good to talk about this, so thanks for having me back on.
I think we should give you the opportunity to clarify, first of all, because there has been lots of rumour or discussion about this, that the charity's financial situation, what is that at the moment? Is it good or is it a concern?
We're in good, Nick Allen. We were actually going into the programme. Fundamentally, we've signed off a budget with the board for the next 3 years, which basically has us breaking even over those 3 years. So that what that means is the money coming in every year pretty much equals the money going out, and that would allow us to obviously keep going with all our services and operations that we currently offer, and still invest in our strategy, and still invest in all our campaigning and advocacy and brand and all those things that we spend money on. And then critically, you say, what's our liquidity? How much money do we have? Well, our board and the auditors have a range that we need to be in to satisfy them, and that's between 22 and 34 million pounds broadly, which will give the organisation enough cover to cope with forward costs for a long time. So that's the range. And so we're just coming to the year end, just happened this year, and we will be towards the top end of that range. And if you look at the last accounts for last financial year when we signed them off, we had more money than that in the bag, actually. So sort of good news is we have good liquidity, we have a strong balance sheet of other assets as well, and our sort of year in, year out operational expenses, the money coming in roughly equals the money going out.
On that note then, around liquidity, and I suppose for charities in general, Matt, are things even tougher now than they were, say, even just, you know, 3-4 years ago? And again, looking to the future as well, is there still a concern about funding, income and expenditure?
It's been tough times economically, politically, since COVID, really, where the cost of living crisis, and then we've had a period of calm. But obviously in the UK, new government, you know, different approach to the budget. Costs going up for all organisations on national insurance and employment costs, you know, inflation running at over 3%, which obviously informs sort of annual pay awards for colleagues in the organisation. And we've just had Trumpian presidency wreaking havoc with tariffs, and how that settles down is uncertain, I think, for the moment. So it's a really challenging environment for all organisations, not just charities, who are having to bear higher costs, struggle with inflation and have this sort of overall global sort of uncertainty. I think for us, as I just said, the budget we signed off doesn't need us to do anything overreaching in terms of our income generation. It's pretty sensible in terms of expecting broadly a bit more money coming in every year than we achieve at the moment. You know, we're not betting the house on some unrealistic expectations. And I think we're trying to help ourselves. So within that, legacies are holding up pretty well at the moment. They're only as strong as the pipeline, you know, what's still in the pipeline to come out. And we're doing a lot of work on marketing to put more legacy cash in the pipeline for future years. That's been a real success recently. We're doing a good job of engaging more funds, donors, sort of corporate partners. It's coming from quite a low base, but we're showing some growth there. And then the other thing we've been doing to help ourselves is trying to drive our sort of commercial activities a bit harder. That's what we call RNIB Enterprises, and that's our retail website. It's the volume we put through our print facility in Gateshead, and it's some consulting. And the good news there is next year's plan is to sort of double the profits on the year we're just finishing now, which is relatively small in absolute terms, but shows strong signs of life and encouragement for the future. More traditional fundraising is still quite hard. You know, people giving us money routinely, month in, month out, buying lottery products, engaging with raffles, doing sponsored events, all those sorts of things are quite hard at the moment. And that sort of level of activity is reasonably static. So the overall picture is we're growing our income a little bit. It looks a very plausible scenario, but the market is hard and certainly there are pressures still on costs.
When we think of the finances, I suppose people probably look at the services that charities provide and so on. But when you're actually within the organisation, you're looking at the balance sheet, things like that national insurance increase, perhaps, you know, pensions, even looking after the estates, the buildings, electricity, heating, that all mounts up. And that, I suppose, is all still going up as well.
As you said, we see that coming through on things like energy bills and professional services and things we need in our facilities, you know, add to the bottom line, as well as what it means for a colleague pay award. So, you know, those pressures don't go away, and we have to work really hard to be able to sort of maintain, you know, income levels, absorb those extra cost pressures and still have money to invest critically. And that's why we're here in our beneficiaries. And as I said, the plan we pulled together for the next 3 years, I think is a very prudent plan, which is realistic about some of the cost pressures, is not over ambitious in terms of income generation, but does show that we've addressed the cost base in the transformation program.
The transformation process that RNIB has gone through has obviously put a spotlight on services, has put a spotlight on staffing. Was it necessary to look at that, reducing staffing, changing services? Although, financially the charity sounds as if it's doing okay now, what was the focus for looking at those particular elements?
The position I've just articulated about the next 3 years includes, the lower cost base that we will have in the organisation coming out of this programme. So that benefit, in essence, in inverted commas, in terms of the savings we'll make, is part of that picture, which allows us to go forwards, absorb some of those cost pressures, still invest to recent levels in our services and our campaigns, our advocacy, and ultimately allows us to sort of be on a sustainable financial footing and not be silly in terms of putting overly ambitious income targets and things in. So it was a necessary program to allow us to maintain that picture. We launched this programme last summer, so we've been going for about 10 months now. It's not a sort of recent thing that we've just cooked up. And in some respects, the world has changed and made things even tougher, actually, which I think has shown we were probably right in realising we had to do this sort of a year ago or so when we kicked it off. So I'm pleased with the sustainable footing that we're on. I think that's critical for our beneficiaries to know there's a strong RNIB that's going to be there for a long time, frankly, on the back of this. I think it's reassuring for our staff who remain with us to know that we're in a good shape going forwards. And we're just very sorry that, we've had to go through a programme and lose some of our colleagues who've given us such brilliant service over so many years. But the organisation did need to, move on, as I've said, put itself on a sustainable footing and look to how it delivered its services to be as efficient as possible.
And RNIB isn't the only charity or national charity having to do this as well. The third sector probably as a whole is now having to take a real hard look on what it can provide and who will be providing that.
It obviously gives us no solace at all to see other charities going through a similar process. Oxfam just announced 275 redundancies this week, the Dogs Trust last week. Our good friends at Guide Dogs have been going through a similar process. Just was speaking to the CEO of Scope today. They announced a month ago they're going to close half their charity store estate. Everyone is struggling with increased costs, with challenges on income generation, therefore with deficits and pressures on liquidity. And it's not a surprise that we're seeing not only in the charity sector, but also other businesses, who are struggling with some of these things as well and having to set themselves up to be sustainable sort of going forward. So I think we weren't in any sort of crisis last year. I think we saw that we needed to do this to generate that sort of headroom to allow ourselves to invest for the benefit of our beneficiaries. And we also realised that there are ways that we could improve, harness technology better to deliver goods and services in a way that we maybe we hadn't been doing as we were coming out of the statutory inquiry. And it was timely for us to sort of put ourselves in a better place through this programme. So I know it's not been comfortable for staff, and we absolutely regret we've had to put everyone through this process, but it does give, critically, it does give the RNIB a very strong future, which I think is critical for 2 million blind and partially sighted people in the UK and critical for those people who are working at the RNIB.
I want to go back, Matt, to obviously the staffing. There have been redundancies. There have been rumours that blind and partially sighted staff were adversely affected around this. Are you able to tell us what the redundancy figures were, what percentage or what number of those staff were blind or partially sighted?
Yeah, I can. And look, we're very sorry to anyone who had to go this process and lose their employment at the RNIB, whether they were sighted staff or visually impaired staff. The simple numbers are that through this process, which was run from last September, we've had different phases. The biggest phase really being now, and there's a few deferred departures into this year, but we will lose about 190 people out of just over 1,300. Those are the numbers. And, we've been looking very hard at all the protected characteristics to make sure we're being as fair as we can be. These things are always tough, but blind and partially sighted people, our colleagues have been affected by this. It's in the same proportion to everybody else, which again, I know is no solace for them, but we will see 24 of our blind and partially sighted colleagues leaving the organisation. 8 of those actually taken voluntary redundancy, and there are 16 where redundancy was compulsory. And for all those people, we've been putting in place as much as we can in terms of outplacement support, providing the offers of equipment at home, the offers of actually paying for licenses on software to allow them still to have accessible software for a period of time, and different individuals have drawn down on those offers in a different way, but that's what we've been offering. So, you know, I'm just very, very sorry we lost anyone in the organisation. We'll end this programme with about 19% of the workforce who will be blind and partially sighted, which is the highest proportion we've had. I know it's no solace those people have left, but there'll be 19% of the workforce who will be blind and partially sighted going forwards.
Do you think these redundancies weaken RNIB's stance? You have been a campaigner to get more blind and partially sighted people into work.
I don't think it undermines our position on really trying to champion blind and partially sighted people into work. I think the positives in the year we're just coming to an end of in terms of our employment record is we've supported about 700 blind and partially sighted people to stay in work in the last financial year. And we've helped another just over 500 into work. So about 1,200 people benefit from the RNIB's efforts on either retaining or acquiring employment, which I think is a good number. And we put some initiatives in place, giving people opportunities who are visually impaired to get into the workplace. So there's the internship program that we've been doing with Thomas Pocklington Trust, where we're now over 50 interns who have gone into largely the sector, the visually impaired charity sector and some other places, you know, to get that initial toehold in the workplace, many of whom have gone on clearly to employment. And our sales guide dogs and Thomas Pocklington Trust are paying for the first lived experience leadership program, which is a program that gives the first cohort, will be 12 talented individuals from the charity sector, to go through a management development program done in conjunction with Holt Ashridge Management College in Hertfordshire, which will give that initial cohort about a year's worth of management training, and they'll come out of that the promise to accede to bigger jobs in their careers. And we hope that's the first cohort of many. So whilst it's been really hard going through this process ourselves, I get that. I think our track record this year on employment as the RNIB has been pretty good.
Are you able to tell us what services have actually gone now or been reduced or indeed strengthened through the transformation process?
To give a sort of few examples of that. You know, one was done last September, which was Tech for Life, where we set ourselves up differently. And yes, we had a smaller team, but we looked at how we were set up. And I mean, the good news in 6 months is we've been delivering more output, serving more customers at a better level, actually, than we did before. And so I think that's just one example that's been running for 6 months now in terms of a service that's been better. In the great bulk of our services around things like the helpline, advice line, sight loss advice, and people ringing for individual queries around things like welfare or tech or employment, you know, we used to have pockets of teams who were good at that, but actually we could be a bit inefficient. So what we've been trying to do is bring that together. So we've actually had one bigger team, more able to cover across different topics. You know, the plan there is to be able to serve customers quicker and better, and actually realise that there's a large majority of questions that we get, you know, people seeking help and advice that actually we could respond to pretty much straight away, because a lot of it is relatively straightforward. And we before were taking those questions back into the centre and then addressing them and sending them back out, and actually taking more time to do that. And so what we're hoping to do now is the majority of queries are getting into our helpline, you know, to be dealt with quicker and with a sort of more instantaneous response, and only those things that need to go back into the centre for more considered review will be done. And I think the other thing is, you know, we're still carrying on investment into things like our eye health and eye care services. So we're up to about, I think, 97% coverage now of NHS Trust having an ECLO, with another double digits of ECLOs being invested in this year. And that's, you know, some critical service that we're continuing to invest in at the RNIB. And I think through 25, 26, the next financial year, we'll be getting up close to just touching 100,000 patients who'll go through an eye health diagnosis or get the benefit of seeing an RNIB ECLO. So services we're either investing in, or we've been working hard to think of different ways to deliver those services whilst being a bit leaner. And so, you know, most of our service provision has been maintained, Alan, this year.
Obviously, Matt, when we talk about services, I'm going to bring up the personal transcription service. There has been a lot on social media, podcasts and so on about changes to the Braille part of that. Can you clarify what is happening with that? Because people felt perhaps they weren't given notice of change, they've been surprised by the change. What's the latest you can tell us?
Support of Braille's in our lifeblood. It was set up in 1868, the National Society for the Promotion of Embossed Literature. So the support and provision of Braille in the UK is massively supported by the RNIB, from what we produce out of Gateshead. People get Braille statements for banks and tech companies, through to the Braille library and the music library we run, which has the biggest set of products in there, and also the help we offer to individuals who come to us and say that, you know, the particular thing they want from someone isn't in an accessible format, and we go in to help them get that from the source and get it in the right format, and that can be Braille. The particular thing you mentioned is the personal transcription service. This is where we get every month probably just over 100 requests across Braille, music, audio, primarily individuals asking us for things that they want, a particular publication they need. And I absolutely get that for that individual, these things are absolutely critical to enrich their life. We had a very clunky operation, and we realised that wasn't sustainable going forwards, and it was right to look at it as part of this programme. And to cut a very long story short, where we've now got to, and we've had a lot of feedback from people, as you just articulated in the last week or two, we are going to continue to support personal transcription for Braille music and audio through a commercial provider, but we will underwrite the cost of that for the next year. But also working with the people coming to us, you know, wanting us to do that. And we absolutely get the safety net is we will to continue to deliver that from a new provider, and actually be a better service than we have provided. If I'm honest, it'll be quicker. But also wanting to work with those individuals coming forward so we can work with them to go back to the source of the document or the product they're asking us for, and try and work out why it's not being provided at source anyway, before we then come to us as a safety net to be able to produce it. So I mean, the simple point, Alan, is we will continue to support and deliver personal transcription and pay for it for those people who've enjoyed it. You know, we're looking at it over the course of the next year. There's quite a lot of moving parts in what I just said, but I would expect the RNIB to continue to support that as long as it's required.
Just overall in the transformation process itself, Matt, in terms of the changes that were made, were blind and partially sighted staff or volunteers or customers consulted in this process?
I mean, honestly, yes, these processes aren't easy. And I said, you know, we're very sorry to anyone who's lost their role in this. And I know we put the organisation through, you know, 10 months of a process. In doing it for 10 months, it did allow us to look at everything properly. And we had lots of different groups of people in the organisation looking at different things. Clearly not everyone was looking at everything. You couldn't run it like that. We have to run a programme. But you know, a lot of the functional teams are involved in something, looking at it. We had some customer, you know, inputs on things as well. We brought together different groups of people to help look at thorny issues. And the reality was, you know, the design of this was really done from August through to January this year. So there were 4 or 5 months where there was a lot of input and a lot of insight, a lot of proposals put forward, business cases done, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, this process in the round has been a very thorough process, actually, in terms of things being properly considered. What I can't promise is that everyone was in the room. We might have wanted to be in the room on every topic, but did we really properly look at everything, you know, and get the right internal input from a lot of blind and partially sighted staff, for example, and people who are working in the operations that we were considering at the time? Then the answer is yes. Clearly, one challenge is getting, you know, a lot of external customers involved on particular things when we're looking at sort of highly confidential matters. And so we were taking a lot of insight that we had anyway from existing customers and from people telling us things who were contacting us through helpline and looking at the requests and the nature of, you know, the services that we were offering and the feedback on those. So that was all factored into that process as well. So I do think over 10 months, we did take a lot of insight and input into all the decisions that we made in this programme.
Would you say, Matt, going forward now, I'm thinking for charities in the sight loss sector, collaborative working is going to be the way to go, you know, looking at the services that are provided, looking at supporting each other. And indeed, you know, beyond the UK borders as well, could we be looking at more international collaboration around, say, working with corporates? A few pieces in there for you.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, I think, first of all, good news. I think, you know, RNIB is set up to be a strong, independent organisation going forwards. I think the thing we've learned a lot in the last few years in respect to this programme is, you know, this challenging national and now sort of international context that we hinted at earlier, is in some things bringing some collective weight of charities and other partnerships together has been critical in getting things done. You know, we've seen it in the eye care support pathway where we convened a whole ton of other charities, Royal Colleges, you know, NHS England, commercial partners from the pharmaceutical sector in that context together to create a really powerful group that then allows us to go and take the eye care pathway into the health service and to government, you know, backed up by that really powerful coalition. We work closely together. I've just mentioned the Lived Experience Leadership Programme. We work closely together with our sister charities in the Vision Partnership and in the Disability Charity Consortium, where we're going to go and talk to the Department of Work and Pensions around access to work or around employment opportunities, you know, we're better having all of us in the room, really standing united. So I think you've seen a lot more of that. And as you say, you touched on the international dimension. We've been doing quite a bit of work in the last sort of year or so that has us making connections with a dozen or so countries where they have similar sight loss charity as ourselves, and actually realizing that our things around technology and things like employment, access to work, accessible information, there's some really common threads running, and how can we work together maybe to take some of those items, working with the European Blind Union and the World Blind Union, into organizations like the UN or the World Health Organization, or back to national governments, you know, making that international case. So the RNIB is strong in itself and has a credibility and a robust position in the UK. Absolutely. I think we need to carry on enhancing that by working in partnership domestically and internationally, where we see opportunity to come together and exert more influence being in a group than on our own.
Going forward, then, will the charity look to listen to its staff, volunteers, customers more going forward than perhaps it has done in the past? Can you see a greater involvement as things move forward?
I don't think we're an organisation that doesn't listen to people. I mean, I think my style has been to get out and about on the shop floor. You know, my background's in retail. I want to see what's going on and talk to people. And I think I hopefully tried to bring that to my time at the RNIB. I think formally we have customer listening groups, and we've had regional inputs where we've got people together, and that doesn't stop and won't go away. So we absolutely get insight from there. And one of the things we've been trying to do, you know, in the program, is to improve how we engage people. I mean, it's a bit of a sort of management cliche, you know, customer engagement. What does it mean? It's hard. It means we've got to try and engage more people to want to come and be involved in the RNIB and actually make it a richer experience for them and for us in terms of that engagement, whatever it is they want to do, whether it's coming, you know, joining us to be volunteers, whether it's getting behind our campaigns, whether it's leaving us some money. Yes, absolutely. You know, but make that a richer experience and get more people mobilized around the RNIB and tell us why they're doing that, you know, and get that engagement up. So there's a very rich ongoing source of information sort of externally, and I think absolutely critical for us to keep listening to that, honestly. I think internally it's challenging in organizations post-COVID, particularly with a dispersed workforce. Got to work really hard, I think, at making sure everyone feels connected and everyone feels, you know, they can have input. And it's difficult, I think, for organizations to pull that off. We formally set up some listening groups from the start of this year. First group for this year, with the groups are meeting in February. So I've just had the first report actually last week on that. So, you know, that's been a very conscious thing we've been putting in place this year to make sure staff feel they've got, you know, a route through that listening group exercise. And we've had strong internal staff networks for a number of years, and we've got some new leadership and capability in that area. We're actually looking to sort of reset those groups going forwards, just to re-energize that process and make sure those internal groups feel they've got a process and a voice to be heard as well. So there's a number of different avenues there, Alan, to making sure the organization is listening to people.
Just before we bring this to a close, Matt, I know you wanted to tell the listeners well, some personal news for you.
Yeah, Alan, no, thank you. After 7 years, I've announced to the organisation this week that I'm going to be leaving at the end of the year. Well, that will be 7 years when I leave. I was really keen to get through this sort of transformation programme and sort of bed it in. I've still got 9 months to go. It takes time to recruit a successor, and you sort of communicate all this stuff in good time so you can then get on with that recruitment and there's an orderly handover. I've been delighted to have this job. It's been a sort of privilege in my professional career. I'm really pleased with the progress we've made over 7 years from a very difficult position when I joined, when we were in the statutory inquiry, to sort of where we are now. It's not without its challenge, and clearly we've talked about some of those challenges in this interview as we've come through this change programme. But I'm going to sort of hang up my executive boots, as it were, pick up one or two trustee roles. I've started one new thing, probably go back to university and do the master's degree I never did first time round. But also stay connected to the sector. You know, I'll stay as a volunteer in the RNIB, find a volunteering role. I'm in the worshipful company of spectacle makers, where there's an opportunity to contribute to the eye health and visual impairment sector. Sure, I can be on the end of a Be My Eyes telephone as well. And clearly, you know, hope to stay connected as a trustee in the charity sector as well. So pleased that we can hand over in really good shape to someone else. And it's been my privilege to be the CEO for 7 years in what's been a fantastic job.
Matt, we will continue to speak with you each week here on RNIB Connect Radio for your regular customer updates. But thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. And an important topic, and good to be able to talk openly on the radio to committed listeners of the RNIB. So thanks for having me.